Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Radio Jones, presented by Pippa Jones.
And of course, with it being the last week of the month, Radio Jones has the wonderful media partnership that I'm so proud of with the excellent Born Free Foundation. Well, today I'm super delighted because I have joining me the founder of that organisation, or the co-founder of that organisation, none other than Virginia McKenna. Virginia, you're so very welcome to Talk Radio Europe.
Oh, thank you so much. It's lovely of you to ask me to join you.
Well, I think it's really the other way around. I should be the one who's thanking you. Quite remarkable. I need to go back to the beginning, because if we think about today and what Born Free means today to so many hundreds of thousands of people, but also, of course, to hundreds of thousands of animals, we can't really look at that without going back to the beginning. And it's 50 years last year since the making of the Born Free film.
Yes, well, actually, my husband Bill and I went to Kenya in 1964 to make the film, and it came out in 66, so you're absolutely right about that. And, of course, we didn't realize at the time what an impact making the film was going to have on us, but it certainly did that. And, well, it changed his career almost immediately, because at the end of filming, when we were coming home, we learned that most of the lions that were used in the film, there were about 22 or 23 altogether, including the cubs, had been sold to zoos and safari parks. And we were completely horrified, as were George and Joy Adamson, about this. And we managed to save three from going to these captive places. And Bill made his first documentary film about what happened to them when they were returned to the wild by George Adamson in Kenya.
It's folklore now. It's a history that very few people have not ever heard of. Born Free is in our imaginations. And if we consider what you did back then, it was brand new. Nobody else was doing this sort of, you know, raising awareness for these types of animals in any way, shape or form, in the way that you and Bill did.
Well, I suppose that by accident, in a way, made this particular film a little different, was that usually when people and wild animals are in the same film, trained animals are used. But the lionesses that we worked, and the lions that we worked with closely, were not trained, you see. So what happened was that when we went out there, they'd selected two ex-circus lions to play Elsa, and they were fully grown. They were 9 and 10 years old, massive animals, and I did quail a little when I saw them the first time, because I thought, oh my goodness, they look a bit daunting. And so you could only behave with them when the trainer guided you, said, oh, now you can do this and now you can do that. And we, at the end of the day, we looked at each other and said, how are we going to tell this story of love between two people and an animal and the affection they had for each other and the life they shared, when we could only work on command, as it were? But, well, fortunately, one day when Bill went in for his sort of getting to know you, 10 minutes, half an hour, this particular lioness was in a really filthy temper, and she tried to get him, and he managed to get out thanks to the trainer. And the producers, who were watching, visibly paling behind the wire, said, no more work closely with these lions ever again. So they were withdrawn, and then all these other wonderful animals came from all over the place. And through George Adamson, we developed a relationship with the five that we had to work closely with. And it was unforgettable, to be honest with you.
Such a privilege, Virginia, one that most of us will never experience. And you know, perhaps that's rightly so. These animals, as you now promote in such a wonderfully robust way, these animals must be left in the wild as much as we possibly can leave
absolutely,
them in the wild.
Absolutely. And they face more and more challenges, of course, because, as you probably know, the lion population in the whole of Africa, and I'm talking about the whole continent, is only 20,000. That's nothing. That's, virtually a metaphorical handful. Mm. So it's very, very worrying, and we have to protect the environment. This is the problem. We're gobbling up our environments, well, all over the world, in this country as well, aren't we? I mean, in England as well.
That's right. Well, exactly, and that is the issue for wildlife all over the world. Virginia, with your hand on your heart, before you embarked on making the film, obviously you'd gone to Kenya in 1964. You were obviously people who had empathy with wildlife, who respected and adored the nature around you. But had you any idea of this sort of, I suppose, the sort of cruelty that we now are so much more aware of because we're 50 years on and we've got so much more information at our fingertips? Was it something that really dawned upon you as you spent time with these animals and then found out that the ones that you'd made the film with were being sold into a form of animal slavery, I suppose?
Yes, I think you're right. It dawned on us. I mean, we filmed for 10 and a half months, so we were there a long time. And, you know, it was a slow process. You can't rush getting to know lions at all. So you have to take their pace, their time, and follow what they would like to do. And they will follow you. If they grow to like you and trust you, they'll join you. And obviously there were one or two times when they were a bit rough and not us over. Well, not me over anyway. but, you know, it was... I think once quite nervous, only once out of those all 10 and a half months. I was only really nervous once, and that was because I had to do a scene which I didn't feel very secure about. It was, I had to lie on the ground with Elsa, one of the Elsas, by a river under in the shade, and I thought, oh, I don't think she'll terribly want to do this. I don't know why. I don't feel she's very relaxed. Anyway, I sort of lay down beside her and stroked her, and suddenly she turned me over, and she put her teeth in my shoulder, and I knew I had to be absolutely still, not move an inch, because if you pull away, of course, they dig in more. So I lay absolutely still, and George, of course, was there, and Bill was there, too. I said, do you mind coming down for this one, although you're not in it? Because I don't know why I feel a bit nervous today. And he came down, and they managed to tempt her off with some food or something or other. So, anyway, I got up and had a cup of tea, and they did the scene differently. So, because it was going to be too risky for me to do it again, I think, so they didn't try that one.
You wouldn't have wanted to, I would imagine. You must.
No, but it didn't make me not like the lioness. I spent lots of times with her. Not lying on the ground, but I did do quite a lot of lying on the ground with her, but not under the tree in the shade with the tinkling river going past.
Virginia, I've sadly never been up close to a lion. In fact, the only time I have been was when I was a child and I was taken to zoos. That's the only time I've seen these creatures. I only see them on screens, and frankly, that's the best way, I think, for somebody like me to see them, because I don't want to be encroaching in their territory. I want to allow them to be.
Right.
But nevertheless, they're just breathtaking, and there's something so primordial about the head of a lion which sparks something in me, somebody who has no experience of being up close to them. For you, I can't imagine how deeply attached you must be to these incredible animals.
Yes, well, we did get extremely fond of the ones we worked closely with and respected those that we saw from a slight distance. Well, I always respect even the ones you know well, too. You must respect them as much as you would hopefully respect another human being or any other kind of wild animal. You must respect the creature for what it is. How dare you not, in a way? So one of the most heartbreaking experiences for us, which is in Bill's first film, was we went to Whipsnade Zoo in England, and two of the lionesses that we'd worked most closely with, a lioness called Mara, who did the swimming scenes in the film, and little Elsa, who played Elsa when she was smaller. They both had been sent to Whipsnade Zoo. And in the film, you see me looking at them through all these wires and bars and God knows what, and I called Mara's name, and she recognized my voice, and she came running across. And, of course, I couldn't touch her because all this mesh was in between us, and, of course, it would have been quite wrong to try and touch her in captivity anyway. But it was probably one of the saddest moments, I think, I remember from those times.
Thankfully, these experiences of which you're speaking now, Virginia, touched you in a way that you and your husband, Bill, put your money where your mouths were, and rather than walk away and having, you know, wonderful memories, you actually thought, you know what, we want to do something about this. We fast forward 50 years and we've got this incredible organisation called Born Free Foundation, internationally recognised, well known, everybody's heard of it. Countless campaigns, never-ending, tireless work from you, your son, from all of the people at the organisation, and some wonderful profile names as well who help you with these wonderful campaigns to bring justice, I suppose, and freedom to many animals who deserve it. Now, let's look at the most recent of these, and this is actually about two lions. And I'm going to ask you to pick up the story here of Nelson and Siam as they travelled to their new home recently.
Yes, well, these two lions, they had never lived together. They don't live together now. They never knew each other, but then they came from very different places. The old one, Nelson, came from a zoo in France that was closed, and he went at first to a very good small rescue centre in Belgium, Natural Help Centrum, and we've had an animal from there before, and they do take the most wonderful care of their rescued animals, but of course it's a bit small for big cats. So they asked us if we could take Nelson and this other young lion, who's 2.5, called Siam. And he was actually born in a circus, and he was sold to a Frenchman as a cub, who kept him in a cage in his backyard. And then the authorities discovered this and confiscated the Siam, because it's illegal to keep a lion as a pet in your home. Well, so it should be. And so he came also to the same rescue centre in Belgium. So we took the two of them. We went by train to Belgium. We went to the centre. We saw them. And we went with Vic Reeves, who came with his wife Nancy to help us say goodbye and wave them off. And they started their journey, first of all, by road to Frankfurt Airport, where they boarded the plane, as we did. We then had a very long journey to Johannesburg, about 10 hours in the plane. And, of course, the fascinating thing is that when lions travel, and we've taken many over the years, when you put them in their crate for the traveling, and it's dark, they've got, obviously, air holes and everything like that, they seem to sort of close down, if you know what I mean. They're not struggling. They're accepting where they are. And I don't think I've ever had an example of any trip that the lions have been fighting against being crated. They all seem to just accept it. And maybe it's because they've all come from captivity. Mm. Maybe they've quite often been kept in crates or whatever. But they do have this kind of philosophy, it seems, an animal philosophy, which allows them to accept the circumstances they're in. But then, of course, when you get there, we got to Johannesburg, and then we changed planes, and they flew down in a charter, and we flew down on the regular airline, and then we met them at Port Elizabeth and waited for them to come in with their crates to make sure they were okay, which they were. Then we drove about 3/4 of an hour to Shamwari, our big cat rescue center at Shamwari near Port Elizabeth, and we stayed with Nelson because Siam was going to the Jean Bird Center, which is our center in the north of the park, and was a bit far. We couldn't do both, so we stayed with Nelson, most of us, and Siam went off with our vet, and the vet of Shamwari, and two other people. And, of course, then the moment came when the door was lifted and he walked into his first, his little indoor house. Then another gate was opened and he walked out into his outdoor pen, small pen, which they call a hospital camp. It's where they're fed, but also if there's any veterinary stuff that has to be done, they're brought in there. And there was a huge trough of water, and he went straight to the trough, and he drank and drank and drank. And then he just lay down, and he didn't seem practically keen to go into the big area. But we then enticed him through some meat across, and then he went into the big area. But it was, you can imagine the change of everything, the smell, the heat, the atmosphere, the surroundings, everything was different and strange. So when he got the meat and eaten it, he came back in again to his house, and I think he felt safe there. And also I said to somebody, you see, Siam has 2.5 years of his memories, and Nelson has 17 years of his, 15 of which were in a zoo, and dark, perhaps, some of his memories. Mm. And so perhaps he takes longer to throw all those things off and like where he is. But now he's just fine. We just had some information through from today, and they're both absolutely wonderful. And going out in their big enclosures, CM did straight away. He was just fine straight away. The first step into his big enclosure, he was a lion in Africa. I mean, it was totally thrilling, wonderful.
It's incredible to listen to you, Virginia. I had a delightful guest on last week, a vet who works with Four Paws International.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Dr. Amir Khalil, and he had recently been part of a team that evacuated a bear and a lion from an abandoned zoo in Mosul, and his story was quite incredible. Yeah. And so very moving to hear, I suppose, what you touched upon there about how the animals reacted, as though they knew that this was their opportunity, that they were being helped, that they were aware of the fact that this was something that they wouldn't fight against, that it was at one point they were stopped at the border, they weren't allowed to carry on, this is a war zone, and they had to wait 3 or 4 days. And Dr. Khalil said that the it was the response of the animals, or the tranquility of the animals, which allowed the people who were fighting to transport these animals to continue what they were doing and know what they were doing was right. They just felt that the animals were taking them on. Understood.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, there is, we can communicate with each other without words, so why can't we communicate with animals? It's body language, it's the look they give you, it's the expression of their ears sometimes, or their eyes, the way they're looking at you. And I remember George Adamson years ago, when I was struggling to understand body language and all that. He said to me one day, because we were watching one of the males in one of the enclosures at the camp, and the male was just looking into the distance as if he didn't know we were there. And George said to me, you must never think that the lamb can't see you just because he's not looking at you. He can see us standing here, absolutely, out of the side of his eye without looking at us. So never take anything for granted. And I think that was a huge lesson about relationships with people as well. You shouldn't take things for granted. You should learn, shouldn't you, from body language and all those things, because we don't always express ourselves in words, but you can tell what people are thinking and feeling without them saying anything. And it's just the same with an animal.
I think as well we can learn from people like you and organisations like Born Free Foundation, who really set an example. And I mean this in the least patronising way possible. The fact is that we as a human race have, up until now, really failed our animals on this planet. But it does seem that there seems to be a change. There is a change coming. And it's because we have a handful of really incredibly courageous and dedicated people who keep on pushing forward and keep on promoting the needs and keep on bringing information to us to make us realise how, first of all, change is possible, and secondly, that animals really deserve to be treated as equals.
Oh, absolutely. Or treated with respect for who they are. And I mean, I don't know what the challenges are in Spain for your wildlife, but here we're facing new ones, really, with the badger cull. Yeah. And also, apparently, the next government is going to have another free vote about fox hunting.
Yes.
Because some people want to bring it back. Well, I mean, this has been banned for a long time now. And the thought of this poor little creature being chased by horse and hound, you know, to meet a pretty ghastly end. I don't understand how anyone could want to harm a wild creature in that way. I can't get inside the head of people like that, you see. I can't understand the logic. Well, there isn't logic, is there? It's some strange thing about domination or something. I don't know. Perhaps someone will explain it to me, but I can't understand it at all.
It is a certain sort of bloodlust that I think exists in some people and not in others, and I feel exactly how you explained yourself there. It's bizarre beyond belief, and quite rightly I can totally understand why some people get so very angry about it. And
yeah, it's such a waste of life. You know, life is hard enough to maintain, isn't it, for all creatures. The survival of wild animals is getting more and more challenging. They don't need, you know, people rushing about killing them to add to their problems.
Yeah.
I don't know, can I just say one more thing? I don't know whether we've talked a lot about big cats and lions and stuff, but it actually wasn't the lions that began our charity 33 years ago. It was the death of an elephant at London Zoo. And she was called Poli Poli, and we worked in a film with her in 1968 in Kenya. She'd been caught as a calf, 2-year-old calf, from the wild, from her family, as a gift by the government of that time in Kenya, not the present one, to London Zoo. And we were allowed to use her for 6 weeks in the film. And at the end, Bill and I said to each other, oh, we can't part with her. She is just the most beautiful, adorable young elephant. And the Sheldricks, wonderful Daphne Sheldrick, who has the elephant orphanage in Kenya to this day, and it's expanded hugely. We wanted to give Poli Poli to her because she had some juvenile elephants and she could have joined them. And we were told we could buy her and give her to the Sheldricks, but they'd have to capture another. And so we thought, we can't tolerate that the decimation of another family when the little one is torn, you know, from the heart of the family. It's one of the worst things you can do to an elephant family. So she came to the zoo. It was one of the worst moments of our life, I think. And anyway, about 14 years later, 12 years later, we had a letter from Daphne saying she'd heard something awful was going to happen to Poli Poli, and could we go and see? So we went to the zoo. And we saw her there. And as they saw us coming to the elephant compound, they took her indoors and shut the door. So we couldn't really see her. But a few days later, we went back again. And this time, they didn't see us coming. And we saw her walking up and down at the back of the compound. And, of course, she looked dreadful. She had one broken stump of a tusk and no tusk on the other side. And her skin was dry and dreadful. She looked just a wreck. And she was pacing up and down and up and down. And we called her, and she called us. She heard us calling, and she came. Immediately she stopped pacing. She came, and she put out her trunk to touch our hands. Well, you can imagine, as a person who cares about these things, what that meant. It was absolutely heartbreaking. Mm. She'd never forgotten us, you see. Well, elephants don't, do they? Mm. Anyway, to cut a very long story short, they wouldn't allow her to go to South Africa, where I'd found a reserve that would like to have taken her, and she would have been taught to be integrated with the wild herds. But they said they would send her to Whipsnade, to the country zoo, where she'd have companions. And unfortunately, she'd been standing for so long, so many hours in her traveling crate, that she collapsed. And when they got her out finally, a few days later, after hopping around inside, they looked at her leg under anaesthetic, and she'd obviously damaged something quite badly, and they put her down. And it was her death that started us, our work as ZooCheck, which is what we were called when we first started. A teenage, beautiful creature just put down. I'm glad to say there aren't any elephants at London Zoo now. I was there recently, and the compound was quite bereft of elephants, I'm glad to say.
Yeah, and yet sadly we still have travelling circuses here in Spain which do employ two elephants, which is just beyond belief. Yeah. It really is quite disgraceful.
Well, it is. It's incredible. We have circus here still, and we've been asking the government to close circuses here with wild animals, and not quite sure why it's taken so long.
That's one thing that makes me angry, is when politicians have the power to actually make these changes, just as we saw recently in France with the politician who has brought in the ban of captive breeding dolphins and orcas in marine parks in France, which is
a huge step.
Oh my
God, you're joking.
Yeah, massive
step. Well,
he's
going back in time, because most people are actually stopping that. Even SeaWorld has stopped breeding in their marinas.
Yeah. Oh. Well, he's brought in a ban in France for the captive breeding of dolphins and orcas, which is...
He's brought in a ban.
Oh, yes,
I see. I'm sorry. I thought you said he'd stopped the ban.
No. He's brought in the ban. So, you know, that's
different.
Yeah, a step in the right direction. We're nearly out of time, Virginia.
I know we are.
We have to mention that the wonderful film Born Free, 50 years ago, I can hardly believe it, has just been released on Blu-ray, and that's a wonderful opportunity for people to get this film and show their children, because it really instilled in me as a child so much about wildlife, and it captures the imagination of young people, and this is where really change happens, isn't it, with young people?
Oh, absolutely, and this is a film for all ages, really, you know, based on Joy Adamson's wonderful book, and it's a true story. That's what makes it special.
Mm. Virginia McKenna, I'm so delighted to speak to you today. I've spoken to your wonderful son, Will, on a number of occasions, many of the great people at your organisation. And, of course, Beth always makes it possible for me. So,
Pippa, thank you so much. I'm so really thrilled to have had a chance to just chat with you like this. It's been lovely of you.
Thank you. Well, absolutely to you too. Bornfree.org.uk, everybody, is the website. Of course, don't forget that this is all done by donations. So anybody who's moved by what Virginia's been talking about today, or by any other animal issue, please do understand that even the smallest amount of a contribution can help. Virginia McKenna, what an absolute privilege to speak to you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
This is Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.